Hello, I'm Brandon House. Do you appreciate the free programs at worldviewradio.com, WVWTV.com? Do you appreciate the fact we put out a 24-hour-a-day stream of free television? By the way, did you know that's free for you to watch, but it's not free to us? We spend thousands of dollars a month in pushing out free programming. We have to pay the bandwidth. Every time someone listens to a radio show, watches a TV show, we get a bill. We have to pay the bandwidth bill. That comes to thousands of dollars a month, not counting the cost of our IT guys and all the other costs that go with producing television, the guys in the control room, and so much more. If you appreciate WVW Broadcast Network, would you partner with us? You can partner with us and help us push out free programming as a ministry of WVW Foundation, because you know what we could do? Put it all behind a paywall. But instead, we said, let's not do that. Let's push out programming for free as a ministry of the WVW Foundation. Would you please consider making a contribution right now at WVWFoundation.com? That's WVWFoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address there if you prefer to support us through the mail. You can also use our phone number and make a contribution over the phone by calling 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. Thank you for supporting free programming through WVWFoundation.com.
This is Brandon House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brannon brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brannon House.
All right, good evening. Glad you are with us. We're going to be joined tonight by Todd Bensman. We're going to be joined by Dr. Peter McCullough, Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America, and we'll be joined by Roger Stone. First up tonight is Todd Bensman. He just spent several days in Mexico. We had him on the other night, but he and I were both distracted because it came in while we were interviewing him about the sad and tragic death of Diamond. We have a lot more to get to because he took a lot of video footage, and I've asked him to provide us with a lot of that, and he has, and I want to play it and talk to you about that tonight. Todd, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Always good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're excited about your new book coming out next month.
Me too. We finally get that thing out there.
Biden's Border War.
Sort of. It's actually called Overrun. How Joe Biden unleashed the greatest border crisis in U.S. history. The other book is called America's Covert Border War.
Oh, okay. So I just combined the two into Biden's Border War.
That's okay. Forgiven. It just gives me an excuse to mention it on the air.
Yeah, it does. That's kind of sad. I just combined your two books into one, Biden's Border War. Okay. All right. Well, let's go with the first video, guys. I think we've got what I send you guys in there. Four videos. Let's roll video one, and Todd can tell us what this is. Let's roll one.
Sure. Yeah. So I was.
Yeah. You want the audio at all? Do we need the audio?
Yeah, if there is some. I don't know if there is some on these, but yeah, there's noise.
Okay.
Yeah, so what we're looking at is a rail yard in near Monterrey, Mexico, which is about maybe 150 miles from the Texas border. I went there with a Monterrey journalist who had his own drone. And what the story was that I was pursuing was this fact that the Mexican rail lines, the freight lines, are used to an extreme extent to haul thousands and thousands of these migrants to the Texas border. And we kept hearing about it. Yeah, we're going to the rail yards. We're going to hop on the train. It's called La Bestia. And eventually we were able to find it and spent a couple days out there watching the migrants show up and board the trains and head to Juarez and Piedras Negras and to Reynosa and Matamoros. You can kind of pick wherever you want to go. They seem to know the times that they leave and which track they're on, the whole thing. And so it was pretty interesting to see this mode of transportation where that's completely unguarded. There's no Mexican police. There's no the security that's out there just nods and waves at these migrants as they board. And it's certainly an inflection point or an intervention point that, you know, Joe Biden could have pressed his Mexican counterpart to block, except they're not interested in doing that. So I'll have a piece about all of the rail traffic, the rail crossings here next week.
So what you're telling me is they don't have to worry about crossing the border on foot. The trains cross the border.
Well, it's getting to the border.
Okay.
From deeper in Mexico. Remember, this is Monterrey.
Do we have trains that go from Mexico into America?
We do, but they usually jump off because once there is a border crossing, there is security right there. They do want to roust them off the trains there. So most of them jump off the trains and then cross by foot.
Okay.
Or swim across or something. But some of them still do get caught crossing the international boundary. And so there's this whole operation on the American side, which I embedded with, where Border Patrol and Texas DPS are rousting. They're doing all these train checks all along in the middle of the night, the undercarriages of these trains. And I was there with them on the American side, on the Texas side, a few days later, where they were, you know, looking for stowaways, and because it still happens. The trains, the issue is that the train, commercial freight train systems on both sides are used by these illegal immigrants to a really huge extent. I mean, an extent that I think nobody really realizes, you know, in this particular mass migration crisis.
So you're saying that they're jumping on these trains hundreds of miles from the U.S.-Mexico border and riding up?
Yes, they are. And these are going to be people who can't, for different reasons, get on a bus and make it there because you do need to have some kind of Mexican permiso, some kind of Mexican document to buy a bus ticket now. So these are the ones that are actually illegally in Mexico. They don't have documents inside Mexico, but nothing to worry about there because they just go to these freight yards and take the freight trains to the Texas border. They can pick anywhere they want to go within a day or 2 days on the riding on the trains. They're right there.
These people could be from Guatemala. They could be from Venezuela. They could be Islamists that have shaved, taken off their normal clothes and trying to fit in as, you know, Hispanics, but they're really Muslims, Arabs, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, and I met all sorts of nationalities on the trains. Most of them seem to be Central Americans. I did meet a couple of Venezuelans out there. These are going to be probably the poorest of the immigrants because, you know, they don't have to pay for bus tickets. And, you know, nobody sweats them out there either. The cartels are not controlling the trains any more than the Mexican federales or the military or even train security. They just wave at them as they're walking by.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Whoever the next president is needs to press Mexico to shut that down because remember the last few weeks that we saw El Paso swamped. I would venture to say that a good portion of those people that were swamping into El Paso got there on the train. Everybody I met out there were like, we're going to Juarez. It's open. The border's open. We're going to Juarez. You know, we've got one that leaves at 4:15. We got another that leaves at 11 on track two. You know, they all know where, you know, there's no conductor, but somehow they have this information.
Now, do they ride on top of the cars? They get opening up the box cars and getting inside?
Yeah, I mean, I've given you some other video.
Okay, let's go to the next one then. Let's go to video number two, guys.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know, that train right there's got auto parts on it. The one on the left, that's the one a whole bunch of them are getting on.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to make themselves comfortable among those auto parts, maybe take a little bit of shelter. You see, these are all, you know, they're all getting ready. This thing's going to take off here in the next hour or so, getting themselves comfortable. And they're all along the length of the whole train, different ones. They don't get too crowded, but there are trains that they ride on top of. And in the first video, they found rail cars that they could get down inside that were empty.
That's what that first video was. They were down inside of the rail car that had no top on it.
Yes.
Okay.
And my buddy was sending a drone over into it, and I was sitting up on top of the edge of it, looking down when the drone was coming in. But there they all are. You can see they're kind of getting ready. It's a little chilly, so they have firewood, and they build fires on the train to keep warm as it's moving.
Gee.
They have their own food and soups, but they try not to eat. Because, you know, there's nowhere to go to the bathroom. You know, there's this whole science about, you know, long distance travel on these things because there's nowhere really to go. So while it's moving, so a lot of them don't eat.
Isn't that something? Let's go to the third one. third video. Wow. And yeah, that's the one we just looked at, right? Yeah, there's the third one. There's the third one. What's going on there?
And this one, you know, in order to get to the tracks, I was following this group of Hondurans, and if you turn sound on, you can hear me communicating with them.
Give us some sound, guys.
Oh, the coke.
Don't open that coke for a while. How's the last guy going to get up there? Oh, here we go. All right. Wow.
And so these guys are on their way to Piedras. I asked, one of them speaks English, the guy in the white shirt.
So what time? 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
Is it crowded up there on the train? La Bestia, right?
La Bestia.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Piedras Negras.
And so they're hopping that wall, and where are they going to on the other side of that wall?
Right. Well, not too far away, they'll find the freight yard. So they have to cross a couple of fences and highways to get over to the freight yard. Because they don't have a car, so they're roughing it. But you can see that, you know, this is a well-known route. They've got a ladder over on the other side. So
and when these people come now, these guys are their goal is to come inside America, right? Their goal is to get
that's right.
To
all of them are probably in now.
Okay, and so where are they going to family that's already here, or are they coming for welfare? Are they coming for cash under the table work? What are they?
Yeah, they're gonna. So these guys are all subject to Title 42. They're getting pushed back. They know they're going to get pushed back under 42 at this time in everywhere except Juarez and El Paso, which was open at that moment. So these guys were all heading to this other city where they would switch trains and then go over to Juarez and cross with everybody that was – this was the week before Biden got there, so it was still crazy. I met a lot of them that were just on their way to Juarez because the word on the street, it travels. I've mentioned this many times on your show that, the you know, there's a live wire intelligence network from the border all the way down to South America about where to go, where it's open. And these guys are plugged into all that on their phones. And it's like everybody knows Juarez and El Paso, that the defenses, the American defenses, had 100% collapsed. There was no guards. There was no nothing there. You could just cross there for weeks and weeks. We had about 90,000 cross in the El Paso sector in just October and November. And the unofficial numbers for December, I heard them today, was 100,000.
Wow.
So 190,000 people crossed into El Paso in 3 months.
Phew. So let me go back to that question I had there, and that is, are they hoping to get on welfare when they're here? Are they hoping to just work for cash under the table? What is their motivation?
These guys are all, they're workers. They're all going to work. They want to work. They're going to make money and send it home.
Okay. So they're the kind of guys that could roof your house.
Yeah.
They could
do
all kinds of stuff. I mean, a lot of them are very skilled workers, hard workers. They work long hours. I mean, we hear about it here in the Mid-South, as I'm sure you down in Texas. So these guys are coming here not because they're escaping, you know, persecution or something. They just know that they can make better money in the U.S.?
Yeah, nobody talks about persecution. That's like not a thing. That's not a real thing among anybody down there. That just becomes a thing when the media gets to them after they've lawyered up.
Right.
And they know what not to say.
Right.
But where I was, they hadn't gotten that far about, like, you know, the American asylum system. They're just, we're going to work.
So how much more money can they make in America and sending back home than they can by working in their own country or in Latin America?
It's night and day. I mean, you can't blame the guys. You know, they can earn, they can probably earn in a day, in, you know, roofing or mowing yards or whatever in the U.S., or even working for minimum wage as they could make in a month in Honduras.
So one day equals 1 month of wages where they come from.
Yeah, I mean, of course it depends, but but that just gives you an idea of the scale of why they want to come, why they want to come in. They're not escaping anything so much as, you know, poverty, and then the money that they send back goes a long way in a place like Honduras. If you send $100, just $100 is just a fortune for rural Hondurans.
And so, are they supporting their mother and father, their grandparents, their siblings? Who are they supporting?
I mean, those particular guys, I didn't really have a big detailed conversation. But I have talked to lots of Central Americans, and typically what they're doing is they've got family back home, and, you know, they will send money home to build houses. So the money will typically be used to construct, like, really what is for them and even for a lot of Americans, mansions, because the construction material is so cheap and they do a lot of the labor themselves and they already own the land. So you can find these mansions all over Central America, and like in the you know, rural hinterlands of, you know, 3-4 story, 10,000 square foot, you know, huge houses.
And it's nice craftsmanship.
I mean, well, for one thing, it's cement. I've been to these houses. I've talked to the families that are building them on the money coming in from the U.S. It's a real thing. The house thing is a real thing. So, and then eventually they'll get kicked out of the U.S. or whatever, and then they'll go live in the mansion is the idea.
So for some of them, it's a temporary thing.
Yeah, I mean, they'll stay as long until they get kicked out.
Wow. And hope that they got to stay long enough to finish the house they're going back to, right?
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow. Let's go to the next video, guys.
That's just, you know, migrants, they're just having dinner. You know, this is right next to the train tracks. And they were offering me, you know, spoonfuls of that gruel they were cooking right there, which I ate.
You did?
I did.
How was it?
Delicious.
Are you serious?
I don't know. I have no idea whether I was going to get sick or not, but if you know, people are offering you a meal, you don't, it's rude to turn them down over there. So
most of these people are extremely friendly and you're not afraid or anything.
No, not at all. I mean, no, I'm not afraid. Now, you know, they're not used to having reporters around.
Do they know you're a reporter? Do they know that's what you are?
Yeah, I strung my press credential around my neck, and I mean, look at me. I'm a, you know, blue-eyed, gringo-looking guy, pretty well-fed, I might add. And, you know, I mean, there's no hiding it. So you might as well just say, yeah, listen, I'm a friendly here. I'm not out to turn you in or do something to hurt you.
I'm working on a book or what?
And then, you know, within a fairly short time, you know, everybody's kind of acclimated to you out there. And, you know, you can interview anybody you want. I had a translator with me. You know, I was asking questions like, you know, how do you know about this place? And where are you going? And what about the cartels? Don't you have to pay the cartels? You can't just get on these. Don't you have to pay somebody? No, there's nothing. Nobody cares.
Wow.
I interviewed security personnel as well.
From the rail yards?
From the railroad, yeah. And I asked, you know, what are your orders? And they said, our orders is just to make sure that they don't vandalize anything. You know, we're not supposed to really do anything about it. One of them told me that they called, sometimes they'll call Mexican immigration, but then nobody ever shows up. So, you know, nobody cares about what,
how many, if you had to put a number to it, how many you think are coming to the American border on the Mexico side, to the American border by train like this?
I can't put a number to it. I can tell you that it's ubiquitous. It's common. Tens and tens of thousands, for sure. This is how they get there. And you know, I was there right between Christmas and New Year's, so it was a slow time. But, you know, everybody around there was saying, you know, there are like just thousands of people on these trains normally. When I was there, it was just like not that you could see there were migrants there, but that there weren't the thousands that there normally are just because of that time of year. People are still at home, wow. And then they'll come.
Was that our last video, guys? Four? Okay. Anything else you want to tell us before we go?
No, I mean, you know, listen, I'm going to write about this next week. You'll see more about the La Bestia, they call it, the beast. It's really sort of it's not a one train, but they call La Bestia as a reference to, you know, those railroad trains. And people have been known to fall, trip, and get cut in half and mutilated under those wheels. It's a little bit dangerous. People die on those trains, but
how many did you see that were children? How many children did you see?
I did see some children. There are a lot of families that travel this way. I'm told a lot of families travel this way. I saw young women. I saw pregnant women. I saw women with young children. For sure. So, you know, it's just hard to say. I mean, everybody's doing it. Wow. Everybody knows you can do it. It's Todd, a great free ride.
It's a great free ride. Did you hop up in the train and ride at all?
I did not. I very well could. I was up on the trains, sure. I was all over the trains, but not while they were moving. Mm-hmm. You know, technically that's illegal. So, you know, I work for a think tank. I'm not going to break the law in somebody else's country, but yeah. I certainly could have ridden that rail without any problem. Nobody would have stopped me. I would have made it all the way to Juarez or Piedras Negras. In fact, a number of the people that I met on that train in that video, later I went to Piedras Negras and spent time at the terminus, and then went down to the river and met them. They made it.
Wait a minute. You saw some of the people hundreds of miles away, and then when you went up there, they had made it, and you saw them, and you knew that, oh, my.
Yes, mi amigo, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you live an interesting life. ToddBensman.com, ToddBensman.com, doing some great reporting. ToddBensman.com. He also posts his articles at CIS.org, CIS.org. And your new book comes out next month. Give us the title again.
That's right. It's called Overrun. The name of the it's a very descriptive title for this current border crisis 2 years in now. How Joe Biden unleashed the greatest U.S. Border crisis in U.S. history.
Wow.
Is the name of it. It'll be Post Hill Bombardier Books, and it'll be in bookstores February 21, but you could pre-order it now.
Yeah. And we want to ask people to go to Amazon.com or wherever books are sold, and please pre-order it. Support what he does, folks. This is how he makes his living in part. And look at the great service he's giving us with all these reports and things. So support him by purchasing that book. Plus, get educated and buy it for other people. Buy for your elected officials and give it to them as well, don't you think, Todd?
They're going to need it over there in the House.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
Todd Bensman checking in. Check out his website, toddbensman.com and cis.org. Joining me now is cardiologist Dr. Peter McCullough. Dr. McCullough, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You are so busy. Tell me what's the latest you're up to. I have some articles I pulled up here a while ago where you are writing about some things on your Substack, but what particularly is on your mind tonight?
We are in a public health crisis, Brandon, of sudden cardiac death, of actually cardiac arrest. Now, every day, the reports are coming in at a more intense pace, virtually every day. Dr. Polycritis and myself, he's from Italy, summarized the athletic deaths in the European soccer leagues. And to give you an idea of where we are, we published this in one of the European journals of immunology. In a letter to the editor, before the vaccines, all the leagues, all the semi-pro leagues, there's a ton of them, 29 cardiac arrests per year. We looked at a blog database, and the blog database had listed a total of all the athletes present, retired, cardiac arrests, and just deaths. They had a number that had accrued to 1598 cardiac arrests, 1101 of them were fatal. But we asked really, you know, under age 35, active players, could we get something that would be comparable to prior to the vaccine? And the annualized number now of sudden cardiac deaths in athletes under age 35 actively playing is 283 per year. So it went from 29 per year to 283. It's a tenfold rise. It's the best data we have. Epoch Times is reporting 270 American athletes of different sports have died. And, of course, you saw what happened to Buffalo Bills player Damar Hamlin now 10 days ago.
Yeah. And do you believe that was, I guess from your reporting in that 10 days, you believe that was, you know, myocarditis or inflammation of the heart and then taking the strong hit or the sudden, you know, burst of energy and adrenaline and then collapsing? You believe that's related, that's shot related?
I went on Tucker Carlson within 24 hours, really kind of an emergency broadcast. And, you know, I told America, I said, listen, he had a cardiac arrest. I looked at all the parameters. I watched what happened. I had published on cardiac arrest with Rick Thompson in the 1990s American Journal of Cardiology. And Hamlin's, all of his parameters told me he was going to survive. I told America that night he's going to survive. He's going to neurologically recover. People were saying, Dr. McCullough, how do you know? There's doctors saying he's brain dead. There's doctors saying all kinds of things. I said, listen, because I'm an expert. America's been listening to me for 3 years. Of course I was right. He survives, as he should, and got very good care on the field, good care in the hospital. And what I want the audience to understand is there's a relationship here. This is the contextually what happened. The White House and the Health and Human Services early in 2021 announced a program called the COVID Community Core Program. $13 billion floated from the government to private entities. A prominent recipient of money in this program was the NFL. So the NFL took our taxpayer dollars to promote the vaccines. Then in June of 2021, the FDA comes out and says the vaccines cause myocarditis or heart damage. And the guidelines for cardiologists tell us we can't let a player with myocarditis play because they could have a cardiac arrest. That was in our guidelines before COVID. Then in the summer of 2021, the NFL says, well, we're going to have a mandate. The player association says, you know, we don't want a mandate. And there's this tension. And finally, the NFL says, we're going to mandate this. So the NFL runs mandates from August of 2021 to March of 2022. Then they drop them. They drop them. No explanation. They drop all the COVID protocols. You never hear about COVID in the NFL after March of 2022. You just don't hear about it.
Wow. We have breaking news. Show my screen here, guys. Breaking news. TMZ is reporting, sadly, Lisa Marie Presley dead at 54 after cardiac arrest. Of course, we're outside of Memphis. We are a tourist destination for many, many people to come to Graceland. It where she was, I believe, at Graceland the day her father died. She comes to Graceland, not uncommon, used to be at least once a year. I don't know the last few years, but she was not uncommon to be seen on the news. The doctor, I mean, she's only 54. What they're saying here is we knew that she'd been taken to the hospital. I think everybody's probably aware that she'd been taken to the hospital, but the sad news is coming in now that, according to family, TMZ is reporting she has passed away. The word was that she was rushed to the hospital after her housekeeper found her unresponsive. Her ex-husband was there and performed CPR until paramedics arrived and took over. They administered at least one dose of epinephrine. How do you say that? Is that right?
Yeah, epinephrine. But let me tell you here, Brandon, this is one of just a string of many, many cases. She wasn't as lucky as Damar Hamlin. Damar Hamlin had a witness cardiac arrest on the field Monday Night Football. She's found dead at home. And what we know here, it's very important. What we know here is that, you know, in each case now, it's a public health priority. We have to know if they're vaccinated. And there's a paper by Schwab and colleagues from Heidelberg, Germany, that has shown people found dead at home like her, that if they've taken the vaccine, 71% of the time, it's a vaccine fatal injury that caused the sudden death. So whether it's myocarditis, a fatal blood clot, intracranial hemorrhage. So in her case, in all these cases, we must know the vaccine status. It cannot be kept a mystery. With Damar Hamlin, we're 10 days into it, and he has not come out and told us. His family hasn't. The Bills doctors. Now, they've told us all kinds of other personal health information, how much oxygen, all the IV lines, and this and that. So it's not like he's keeping his protected health information a secret. Every case, they have to come out and announce the vaccine status. It's very helpful. It's a public health priority to know this. If she took the vaccine, we need to know the dose and the brand and whether or not it's implicated with the cardiac arrest. What I've said with Hamlin is that we have this straight line relationship, right? So the players were mandated to take the vaccine. The FDA says the vaccines cause heart damage and blood clots. And when the autopsies are done, they find blood clots and heart damage. And now we have these cases like Hamlin, unfortunately, like Presley, who doesn't make it, and countless others. We're in a crisis of sudden cardiac death.
Absolutely. Now, on my Worldview Report tonight, my 30-minute nightly newscast, I reported on one young person after another dying. Collapsing and dying in their sleep. A student found dead in the bathroom. Just one after another. I mean, I could have spent the whole night, 30 minutes straight, reporting one story after another, and I wouldn't have covered them all. We had more. And yet, I hear, doctor, that the CDC, vaccine benefits outweigh risks for young males. Have you heard that?
It's they're simply at this point in time, the CDC is unmoored. The CDC and the FDA are administering the vaccine program. They are conflicted. They've been told to get a needle in every arm. We can't have them giving us a risk-benefit analysis. We need separate independent experts. I would be such an expert to give a risk-benefit analysis. And I can tell you, it's been published in the peer-reviewed literature. Freeman and colleagues from LSU has published it from the original clinical trials. the risks of the vaccines outweighed the benefits. The original randomized trials were a no-go. There were more serious adverse events with the vaccines than they actually helped anybody.
At PeterMcCulloughMD.substack.com, PeterMcCulloughMD.substack.com. Here's from January 9th. Explosive increase in cardiac symptoms after second injection, subtitled Adolescent COVID-19 Vaccination Results in Cardiotoxicity and ECG Changes Promoting Concern. Doctor?
Well, here we have a report, a large study from Thailand, from Asia, I think Taiwan. And you know, they just characterize symptoms of young people. These are teenagers, young people getting the vaccine. 17% have cardiovascular symptoms. This is going to be too hard to sort out who's really having heart damage and who isn't. They tried to get EKGs on the kids, and the EKGs were very abnormal in a lot of them. You know, this is a tsunami. We have four sources of survey data now that are stunning. We have the VSafe data from the CDC. Shockingly, 7 to 8% of people who take a vaccine are so sick they have to go to the urgent care, ER, or be hospitalized right away. That's how toxic they are. 25% are incapacitated that day or the day after. We've got the Zogby report, says survey, 15% of people now have chronic diseases they're dealing with after the vaccine. Skidmore survey, MSU, fully published now. Michigan State University, 22% know somebody who's been seriously damaged by the vaccine. And then the last thing was the bombshell was over the holidays, the Rasmussen report. 28% of Americans know somebody who's died of the COVID-19 vaccine.
And yet it just keeps going. I mean, they're still promoting. They're still asking for it. I mean, is 2023 going to be a year where we just get, I don't know how you can, but is this 2023 a year where you just get used to hearing about young people dying?
We shouldn't. You know that I've been called out as the first public figure to express concerns about the safety of the vaccines in March of 2021 in the Texas Senate. We had the World Council for Health, after multiple stern warnings, called for them to be pulled off the market June of 2022. And now in the U.S. Senate, December 7th, 2022, I concluded the three-hour session I co-moderated, and I told America the vaccines have to be pulled off the market. So we have official calls to pull them off the market. The companies either have to do it or the FDA has to do it, but it has to be done. Andrew Brigden, UK Member of Parliament, the same thing. He's made the call. Malcolm Roberts in Australia. Prashant Bhushan in the Supreme Court of India has made the call. All over the world now, the vaccines are not safe for human use. They have to be pulled off the market. Otherwise, we're going to see more cases like Presley.
Look at this headline by Dr. McCullough again, January 11th at his Substack. Inherited risk of sudden death triggered by COVID-19 vaccination. You say something that's very interesting in this article, and that is genetic conditions. So when we talk about some people getting the shot and nothing happens, and others something happens pretty drastically, there could be a genetic connection. Some people might be genetically disposed. Is that right?
It's true. Two papers from Asia have found, you know, they're asking the question, why do some people die like Presley or have a cardiac arrest like, and why are other people fine? And they found that at least one known sodium mutation, the SCN5A mutation, it results in a EKG pattern called Brugada that can express periodically. But some of these are latent and they're not clinically recognized on the EKG. But, you know, two out of two papers show that there is at least a hint of genetic predisposition. So that means out there, watch out if someone is carrying one of these mutations, they get the vaccine, their number could come up. And when these cardiac arrests occur, you know, they are completely unpredictable. There are two times of the day. There's a fireman who died in the last 24 hours. He died in his bunk. So 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. and then with sports and on the playing field. Those two times, because there's a surge of adrenaline during both of those periods of time. And that seems to be a trigger, at least in some cases. Now, the other fatal cause is pulmonary embolism or blood clots. And someone who dies during the day, like Presley, and when they come out there and they put the defibrillator pads on and it's not a shockable rhythm, all they can do is give epinephrine. To me, that's looking down towards a fatal blood clot or pulmonary embolism.
Oof. Now, I understand the heart, the adrenaline coming for someone on a field, That's very interesting. 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. What's going on there?
Yeah, the normal waking cycle, believe it or not, we all wake up in the morning because we have an internal surge of adrenaline, cortisol, and other stimulants. You know, the body does it. The body has a standard circadian rhythm. And so it's very interesting. But we've seen, Democratic congressman from Illinois, Sean Casten, very promoting vaccines, going to vaccinate his family. His beautiful 17-year-old daughter, perfectly healthy.
Right.
She dies right during that time period. Then he comes out and says she died of a cardiac arrhythmia in her sleep, previously healthy. With that, what I'm saying is, listen, unless they have prior heart disease that's known or cancer or suicide or drug overdose, it is the vaccine until proven otherwise. And the parents and the family have a responsibility. There's another case out there, last 48 hours, a boy has a cardiac arrest on the basketball court. And immediately the mother said, listen, he had cardiac surgery. He's had a pulmonic valve surgery and all of this. And she laid it out. And immediately, you know, everyone could understand that there's prior heart disease. Okay, we can not implicate the vaccine. But the simplest thing is to come out and say, did they take the vaccine or not? And then is there any pre-existing heart disease? In almost all the cases before the vaccines, we know that they have heart disease. We know that they have a problem. And then we know the cardiac arrest could occur. Since the vaccination, these are just coming everywhere. It's every day we hear about another athlete, another prominent figure.
Yeah. Now, I've not been vaccinated, obviously. No one in my family has, and I'm not going to be. Let's say I dropped over dead tomorrow of a heart attack. Being that I've had COVID at least twice, maybe three times, but at least twice, spike proteins are in my system, I'm assuming, from having had COVID. How likely am I to have to worry long-term, even though I have a good history in my family of good, healthy heart, longevity? I'm not genetically predisposed to heart condition because, again, I've got longevity and good hearts in my family. But let's say I fall over dead tomorrow of a heart attack. You know, well, House didn't get the shot. He died of COVID. That'll be what they want to say about me, right? But how concerned would my family be saying, well, he never got the shot, but he got COVID at least twice pretty severely. He had the spike proteins in his system. Would you look to that as a contributing factor?
Yeah, I remember when you got COVID, you were pretty sick. Yeah. I recall that in detail. What we know there is a paper from the Veterans Administration has shown that there is a risk period after COVID for having a heart attack. Or a cardiovascular event, atrial fibrillation, a ventricular arrhythmia. And there, that risk period is about 6 weeks after COVID. And then, wow, then the risks come right down. And most of it's hospitalized COVID. So the Japanese, you know, what they're doing is they use high-dose aspirin for 90 days in the treatment of COVID. So do the Italians. I've tended to do that in patients with atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. Myself, I'm probably a little older than you. But I took aspirin myself for 90 days afterwards just to cover myself during that heart attack and stroke risk zone afterwards.
Wow. But I am really glad I asked that question.
Yeah, no, but it's not a risk forever. What we know with these vaccines is people are taking these vaccines every 6 months, so they keep getting the system juiced with spike protein. And now we're starting to see blood clots, myocarditis, many months afterwards. I've had two ladies in my practice now with blood clots and shooting to the lungs. I mean, potentially fatal now 18 months after the vaccine.
Wow. Okay. Three more questions. How is it going with the fight for your license?
Well, my license is intact in Texas, but I'm appealing the decertification attempt that's happening by the American Board of Internal Medicine. And boy, I'm in good company. You know, famed psychologist Jordan Peterson in Canada.
Yes.
They're trying to strip him of his psychology credentials.
Yes. All right. Number two, what's the name of the book behind you that you wrote?
The book behind me is Courage to Face COVID-19. Coming up on 1,000 five-star ratings on Amazon. And I know you know how hard the book business is.
Yes,
we're
it
doing
is.
Great.
Yes, yeah. It is. So give us the title again so they can order it.
It's Courage to Face COVID-19. You can order it on CourageToFaceCovid.com. Get it through Amazon or just get it directly, a little cheaper, directly from the website.
Excellent. And then finally, Dr. John Witcher, my buddy Dr. John Witcher, who's been in studio many times and with me in other parts of the country where our families are close. We communicate regularly. I understand you might be in Mississippi next month.
Well, I'm going to be in Mississippi to help with some key proceedings in the Mississippi Senator Legislature House of Commons. And I've done that, by the way, in North Carolina, New Hampshire, Colorado, you know, so many other states, Ohio, across the United States. And that's actually where the action happens. I'll tell you, the other place where action happens is the AG, the Attorney General. If people really want to make things happen in their state, Mississippi's been a house of misery with mandates and all kinds of draconian moves. You know, we've been fortunate in Texas. I don't know how you guys in Tennessee and have been, but we've been fortunate in Texas. We've had liberties throughout. So.
Yeah, we've had pretty good liberties as well. Well, Dr. John called me about that the other day, and he and I are talking, and he's interested in us sending our film crew down there and filming it all and making sure that what you guys do and say can get some wide distribution. So I think we might be sending our film crew down there in February to capture a lot of that for him.
Well, sending a film crew is so important. I'll never forget the first time I testified in the U.S. Senate, Brandon, in 2020, no film crew. The only way it was going to come out on C-SPAN, and it was delayed and blocked, and YouTube took it down. And we learned our lesson the second time and thereafter in the U.S. Senate, multiple film teams, multiple interviews before and after. We have to make American lawmakers accountable. And one of the ways we do that is with the camera and the media right on them.
Absolutely. Well, we said we wanted help. If we can send a film crew down there free of charge, we're happy to do it free of charge. I said, look, it's a win for us. We're in the news business. We can get out news. You guys get it filmed. Everybody wins. So I think we'll be sending our film crew.
I think that'll be great. And you know, I'll be happy to come back on. These updates, I'm just stunned with what's happened to Presley.
Yeah,
and this has just been another case.
It's heartbreaking. Again, we're right outside the outside of Memphis, so we're not far from Graceland at all. And I hate to say it, but I think we're going to see her interned. And no one wants to see 54-year-old girl and lady interned there. But my guess is that's where she's going to be, next to her father and her son is there already, I think. Unfortunately, she lost her son, you know, not too long ago.
Well, I mean, let's see how this shakes out. So if there's a ready explanation, you know, a suicide, a drug overdose, it's found out that she had terminal cancer, something
right,
like this, that she fell and has bleeding in her brain. Okay, but if there's no readily identifiable answer, and if indeed she's taken a vaccine, and our CDC says 87% of Americans took a vaccine, so most likely she did, it is the vaccine causing myocarditis and precipitating the cardiac arrest or the fatal blood clot, until proven otherwise.
Yeah. Ow. Wow. All right. As always, Dr. McCullough, thank you so much for all you're doing. And we want to invite people to go to petermcculloughmd.substack, petermcculloughmd.substack.com. Thanks for all you're doing.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Peter McCullough checking in. Check out his site, petermcculloughmd.substack.com. All right. We come back, we're going to hear from Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America. Got some good news from the Supreme Court, at least from two justices of the Supreme Court. And they're going to check in with Roger Stone concerning some new information from Roger Stone. We're going to take a quick break, come back with Mike Hammond of Gun Owners America. We'll be right back after this break.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and in light of the recent events, your continued support means everything to myself and my employees. To thank you, we're having the biggest sale ever on all my pillow bedding. Get my pillow bed sheets for as low as $29.98, a set of pillowcases for only $9.98. In this economy, instead of buying a new bed, rejuvenate your bed with a My Pillow mattress topper for as low as $99.99. We also have blankets in a variety of sizes, colors, and styles, like plush, waffle, or gossamer, for as low as $29.98. We even have pet blankets from small size to the ones for your car. Get huge discounts on duvets, quilts, down comforters, and so much more. So go to MyPillow.com or call that number on your screen. Use your promo code and you'll get huge discounts on all MyPillow bedding, including MyPillow bed sheets, for as low as $29.98. Get all your shopping in while quantities last. Please order now.
All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us again. Sad breaking news. TMZ is reporting Lisa Marie Presley dead at 54 after cardiac arrest. We'll keep you posted as to what we hear. I want to play this video again here real quick, guys, because last night we talked to Wes Peters. I did my whole radio show on this today, which we turned into a TV show as well. If you go to WVWTV.com, let me see if it's there. WVWTV.com. Let's see if they've put it up there yet. Yep, here we go. Look at this. Look at my website. WVWTV.com, okay? Here, by the way, here's a new show we're carrying by Dr. Rob Lindstedt, Fighting Over the Temple Mount, History, Archaeology, and the Bible. Here's the interview I did last night with Wes Peters, but here's my radio show from today. Worldview Radio, which is also TV. FDIC debates keeping public in the dark about bank failures and that you may not get your money back. They're debating that. And some of this is not up for debate. So if you want to watch the full hour on that, you can go there and do that. But what I showed last night, I showed a lot more on TV today. I showed a lot more on TV today because I didn't have time to go into a lot of it last night. So I showed more today. But the FDIC, and what I did not show you last night that I showed in my TV show, radio show today, was the FDIC, they were saying that it should be based on a need-to-know basis as to what's going on with our banking. Now, they keep talking about Article 2. And Article 2, I went and looked it up to see what Article 2 is. Look at this right here. Cornell Law School. Article 2, the orderly liquidation provision of the Dodd-Frank Act, okay, provides a process to quickly and efficiently liquidate a large, complex financial company that is close to failing. Title II provides an alternative to bankruptcy in which the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC, is appointed as a receiver to carry out the liquidation and wind up the company. All right. This can happen over a five-year period. The FDIC is given certain powers as receiver and a 3 to 5 year time frame in which to finish the liquidation process. Now, again, in some of these cases, you ain't going to get anything back. You say, well, wait a minute, the FDIC is going to insure me up to $250,000. Yeah, but I actually read an article today from USA Today on whether or not the FDIC could cover enough banks that failed. If too many banks failed, they're not going to be able to cover it. Unless Congress, of course, allocates a bunch more money. But what did we learn last night? Last night in our presentation last night from Wes Peters, we learned that their own presentation said what? Let's go to the presentation. Here it is, PDF. Title II. This is from 2012. Resolution Strategy Overview. This has been in the works for a long time. Prohibition of taxpayer bailouts. So no taxpayer bailouts again. Not doing that anymore. So that leaves you with a bail-in, meaning they're going to take your money. This is what Yellen told us when she was at the Federal Reserve. I think it's number 6. Here we go. Ensure the failed company's investors bear the losses arising from failure. Well, I think if you're a depositor, you would fall into that category. But what I played today that I didn't have time to play last night was them debating how much to tell the public. And many of them were saying it should be a need-to-know basis. Certain people are running companies and banks. They need to know. But the general public, not really necessarily important to know. And what was really interesting is they went on to talk about the fact that if one of these events occurs, hopefully it will occur on a Friday. Hopefully it will occur on a Friday. Let me see if I can play a little bit more of this video before we go to our buddy Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America. Just play a little bit more of this video for you guys. Listen to this. Here we go.
B, how would we use targeted guarantees to allay concerns about excess cash use? There's a lot of questions here. And so, you know, there are a lot of things we've been thinking about, and what we want to hear from you today is what you think would the priorities would be in order to go about setting expectations appropriately in public about how we would execute Title II, so that if and when we do have to have that announcement on Friday night, ideally Friday night, that people are in a position to receive it, understand it, and say, yeah, that works. And we can see how this will happen. Of course, there will be doubters, but there's a lot of things going on. So with that.
First of all, I'd like to praise the FDIC for its unrelenting pressures to have more disclosure under the actual public reports. I think they have been very helpful. Second, I guess I am a bit pessimistic about your ability to communicate with the people who really need to know in terms of a crisis. And this is partly from my experience of teaching this stuff.
As I said on radio today, that was a really awkward, out-of-place laugh. But here we go.
A lot of interest just after the crisis. It's dwindled over time. And so people are sort of less and less interested in getting into the nitty-gritty and some of the really interesting developments. So I would think your strategy ought to be to disclose as much as possible to people who professionally need to know about it. And that would certainly include the ratings agencies and the people within the banks who are responsible for these judgments. And simply have publicly available a place where people can go if they need to know more. Because we're dealing with a society where people are getting their information in tweets. There's just no patience, I think, for going through the elaborate and careful planning that has gone on. It should be there. It should be accessible when people need to know. But I don't think you have much hope of reaching a public that doesn't have a professional need to know.
Wow. Unless you have a professional need to know. So they go on to say many more things there that are quite interesting. But we don't have time to get into it. But let me play for you just as a reminder how quick all this can happen. All right, this was from 2008. This is a Democrat Congressman Paul Penjarski back in 2008. Listen to this, or thereabout. It was right after the 2008 crisis. I'm playing this as I have many times before, just to warn you how quick this can happen. And they hope it'll happen on a Friday night.
Extent. Why did we do that? We did that because the secretary... Look, I was there when the secretary and the chairman of the Federal Reserve came those days and talked with members of Congress about what was going on. It was about September 15th. Here's the facts, and we don't even talk about these things. On Thursday at about 11 o'clock in the morning, the Federal Reserve noticed a tremendous drawdown of... money market accounts in the United States to the tune of $550 billion was being drawn out in a matter of an hour or two. The Treasury opened up its window to help. They pumped $105 billion in the system and quickly realized that they could not stem the tide. We were having an electronic run on the banks. They decided to close the operation, close down the money accounts, and announce a guarantee of $250,000 per account so there wouldn't be further panic out there. And that's what actually happened. If they had not done that, their estimation was that by 2 o'clock that afternoon, $5.5 trillion would have been drawn out of the money market system of the United States, would have collapsed the entire economy of the United States, and within 24 hours, the world economy would have collapsed. Now, we talked at that time about what would happen if that happened. It would have been the end of our economic system and our political system as we know it. And that's why when they made the point, we've got to act and do things quickly, we did. Now, Secretary Paulson said, let's buy out these subprime mortgages. That's what he came to Congress. But he said, give us latitude and large authority to do many things as we decide necessary. And give us $700 billion to do that. Shortly after we enacted our bill with those very broad powers, the UK came out and said, no, we don't have enough money to buy toxic assets. Instead, we're going to put our money into banks so that their equity grows and they're not bankrupt. And so the UK started that process, and that's true. It was much cheaper to put more money in banks as equity investments than to start buying their bad assets, because it became early determined that we'd probably have to spend $3 or $4 trillion of taxpayers' money to buy these bad assets. And we didn't have, we only had $700 billion. So,
wow. So again, just to show you how fast it can go, folks. So FDIC debating at the end of last year how much to tell you, the American public. Let me just mention quickly, one of our sponsors for 17 years has been Swiss America. Wes Peters was on here last night. And if you'd like to learn more about, well, not to have all your eggs in one basket and not to be counting, or one basket, and not to be counting on the FDIC to insure you, because again, if they run out of money, Congress is going to have to give them more. And we've already been told they're not going to do bailouts, bail-ins, like Cyprus a few years ago. So if you'd like to check into diversifying into precious metals, putting gold in your IRA and others, things such as what's the difference between numismatic and bullion, freshly minted bullion, if you will, you can get your questions answered by getting a free packet of information from Wes Peters. Just text him your name and address. You don't even have to call him. He'll send it to you. Then you can talk to him later after you've gone through the material. 602-558-8585, 602-558-8585 to get that free packet. Folks, trying to show you what we believe is coming. Don't give financial advice, give financial opinion, but trying to warn you as to what we think is coming. And what they seem to be kind of telling us is coming. All right, let's go, before we go to Roger Stone, let's go quickly to our buddy Mike Hammond by phone. Mike, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Hello, Brandon. Hello, America.
Hello, America. Mike Hammond is with Gun Owners of America. I wanted to talk to you real quick about this. Justice Alito and Thomas just gave Gun Owners of America good news. We need some good news. Tell us what the good news is tonight related to our Second Amendment.
Well, the good news is that they slapped down Governor Hochul, the state of New York, and the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York. Ever since last summer, when the Supreme Court held that New York's laws regarding guns were unconstitutional, basically New York has been playing these games. It's been in a convened legislature, and it said, well, if the Supreme Court doesn't like what we're doing on guns now, we're going to do even more onerous activities to restrict the rights of gun owners. So they responded to the Supreme Court's decision that their laws were unconstitutional by making them more unconstitutional. Today, the Supreme Court basically slapped these people down, said we've had enough of it. Unless the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York sets up and conducts oral arguments quickly justifying their position, we're going to just throw them in the wastebasket. And interestingly, I have inside information that the Second Circuit is taking that very, very seriously, and that they're responding to the Supreme Court and are about to reverse their position and let the position of the district court, completely throwing New York's gun laws in the wastebasket, prevail.
Wow. In fact, you report at gunowners.org that Thomas and Alito said that your case there at Gun Owners has exposed, quote, novel and serious questions under the both First and the Second Amendments, end quote.
Yes, it said that district court, the lower court, which handed down the pro-gun opinion, quote, raised novel and serious questions. And it said, by contrast, the Second Circuit's order holding a stay on the district court's decision was, quote, totally unreasoned, close quote. So it the Supreme Court basically bashed the legislators, the governor, and the courts that were standing in the way of the implementation of the Second Amendment by this brave New York District Court Judge Sotheby.
Wow. All right, other story before we go to Roger Stone. Illinois, state Senate voting soon to ban commonly owned firearms. By the way, this is a state also that is trying to expand abortion They're allowing doctors to come into their state. I just read over at LifeSite News today. See if I can find it real quick. LifeSite News today. I found the article where Illinois was allowing. Here it is. Illinois House passes abortion amendment limiting safety measures while expanding access. Out-of-state abortionists who lost their license after committing illegal abortions will be welcome in Illinois. So how appropriate that Illinois, they seem to be for killing, so they have no problem, obviously, with the crime and the killing going on, and they don't want citizens to protect themselves from all the crime and killing because they're obviously a very pro-murderous state there in Illinois. A lot of great people in Illinois, a beautiful state in many regards, but Chicago is just a hotbed of political corruption. I mean, so many of their governors have gone to prison. But here we have now Illinois State Senate voting soon to ban commonly owned firearms.
I hate to say it, hell is going to be very hot for them.
Indeed.
Indeed. They basically banned, quote, assault weapons, a category of a firearm which doesn't really exist except in the liberals' minds. And incidentally, the Supreme Court has already said with respect to other states that similar bans are unconstitutional, and it's just thrown them in the wastebasket. The Supreme Court has also held that the ban on magazines, that is, if you have more than 10 rounds for long guns and more than 15 rounds for handguns, the magazine would be in violation of Illinois law. It's also taken identical legislation to that and thrown it in the wastebasket. So I don't know what Illinois is thinking that it's doing. Going through this exercise, but the Supreme Court has already said that everything it's doing is going to be dumped into the trash bin of history.
Excellent. Well, groups like Gun Owners of America help us keep our liberties and freedoms. Gunowners.org, gunowners.org. Thanks for the update, Mike.
Thank you, Brandon.
Appreciate you. Mike Hammond there, folks. Check out his website, gunowners.org. Don't forget, before we go to Roger Stone, if you appreciate what we're doing here, folks, we need your support. Sheets, towels, blankets, pet beds, slippers, sandals, mattresses, mattress toppers, robes, and more can be had at mypillow.com. Use that promo code B66. You get savings, we get credit. Same code, B66, works at mystore.com, the home for American entrepreneurs. mystore.com. Also, don't forget about freeze-dried food, emergency freeze-dried food. If you go over to WVWTVstore.com, there we go, WVW, there it is, WVWTVstore.com, click on emergency food supplies, all emergency food supplies. You'll find we have the Ready Hour Ultimate Breakfast Kit, mega protein with real meat, Ready Hour Fruit, Veggie, and Snack Mix. We got the gluten-free kit, 1 year, 2 year, 4 week, 3 month, 6 month, 72-hour test kit. It's all available at WVWTV.com. I have enough for my family for 2 years. Started out with enough for 6 months, moved it up to 2 years over the last few years. You do what you feel comfortable with, but I think there's going to be a day coming with this manufactured food crisis where people who have... Well, you know the old saying, he who has the most toys wins. It's going to be, that's an old bumper sticker, right? It's who has the most food stored away is going to be in the better shape as we move toward hyperinflation and societal breakdown. I'm reading now some grocery stores around the country now are locking up their food. When did you think you'd start seeing grocery stores locking up certain food items? Well, that's now becoming a big problem due to the food cost, theft, and robbery of grocery stores. So again, it ain't even gotten all that bad yet. Just wait, and you'll be glad you have your secure food with a 25-year shelf life that actually tastes really good. WVWTVstore.com, WVWTVstore.com, or you can order it by phone, even right now. Someone's standing by to take your order here in our building, 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. Joining me now is Roger Stone. Roger, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Brandon. You know, I've seen your garage. You have enough food for the next 100 years.
I do have a lot, don't I? Oh, gosh. Well, Roger, look at this headline. This is over at rogerstone.substack.com. rogerstone.substack.com. Nixon threatened to reveal the CIA's involvement in the Kennedy assassination. I found this fascinating today. Tell me about it.
Brandon, this is the latest in a series of shocking developments. A number of documents were declassified in connection with the Kennedy assassination, but just prior to that, documents were declassified that showed that the Central Intelligence Agency knew about the Watergate break-in in advance, that they had infiltrated the Watergate burglars team. Four of the Watergate burglars were still on the Central Intelligence Agency's payroll, were still reporting to their handlers. And it is now this shocking Watergate era tape has surfaced, first reported by Politico, of all people, in which Richard Nixon, at that juncture, mired in Watergate, desperately seeking options and leverage, meets with Richard Helms in the White House. We have a recording of the conversation, and essentially he threatens the director of the CIA by making it clear that he knows about the agency's involvement in the assassination of John Kennedy. Now, the approach Nixon uses is circuitous, but that's typically Nixon. And he basically says to Helms, Richard Helms, the head of the CIA, you know, Dick, things could get really bad here, meaning Watergate. And I know there's a lot of deep secrets over there, you know, some things that had to be done, the so-called Department of Dirty Tricks. He's referring to Guatemala. And the coup that was engendered there by the CIA. He's referring to the Bay of Pigs. And he says, he just spits it right out. Nixon says, so, you know, I can be counted on to keep the agency's secrets. Dick, in other words, when they get down to who shot John, there it is. He lays it right out there.
He said that. He said in the recording, I know who shot John.
Yeah, it's right there. So, I mean, he is really, now, H.R. Haldeman, President Nixon's chief of staff, tells us in his memoirs that Nixon believed that the Kennedy assassination was related to the Bay of Pigs invasion, the failed Bay of Pigs invasion, that Nixon, upon becoming president, orders his White House counsel, then John Ehrlichman, to demand that the CIA hand over all documents pertaining to the Kennedy assassination. And CIA Director Richard Helms defies a direct presidential order and turns over nothing. We also know, now that we have this tape, that he was trying to get the agency to protect him in Watergate, and he was threatening them with exposure of their deepest secrets. As I wrote it at my new Substack, additionally, it's now pretty clear that White House Chief of Staff Al Haig, General Alexander Haig, former deputy to Henry Kissinger, Nixon's final White House Chief of Staff, told me in an interview that when Agnew was removed from office as vice president, the selection of Ford gave Nixon enormous leverage because Nixon knew that Gerald Ford, as a congressman, at the direction of FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover and former CIA Director Alan Dulles, had purposely taken a pencil and changed the official autopsy diagram of Kennedy's body, moving the drawing that would depict a wound in the upper back to the back of Kennedy's neck in order to accommodate the so-called single bullet theory and the idea that Kennedy had only been shot. There were only three shots. They all hit Kennedy, and they all came from behind. So Haig told me directly that Nixon sent Al Haig to see Gerry Ford and basically said, look, I know what happened in the Warren Commission. And if I'm going down, I'm taking everyone with me. To be very blunt, Al Haig said Nixon had Gerry Ford by the balls. And I think that explains the pardon that came that was very costful to Gerald Ford politically, probably cost him the 1976 election.
Wow. Here is another article of the Gateway Pundit. Attorney believes evidence will soon be released that confirms FBI in 2016 investigated Seth Rich's laptop, knew he supplied emails to WikiLeaks, and knew Russia collusion was a lie. Which, if that's the case, if the FBI knew this, they knew the whole time you were being investigated and they were ruining your life or trying to ruin your life, they knew the whole time this was they were framing you.
Well, only those who followed the mainstream media narrative about my trial would believe that there was some evidence of Russian collusion. There was none. I mean, that's the irony here. I was convicted of lying about something that never happened.
Right.
It's not even possible. The government provided no evidence of Russian collusion or WikiLeaks collaboration on my part. They produced no evidence that I knew about or was involved in the phishing and release of John Podesta's emails. The whole purpose, they tar you with the Russia brush, but the real purpose of the charges against me was to try to pressure me to testify against Donald Trump. And of course, I wouldn't do that. We also learned today, as you know, that over at Twitter, when Devin Nunes issued the final report, the memo that summarized the results of the House Intelligence Committee investigation into Russian collusion when he was its chairman, that Adam Schiff and Senator Dianne Feinstein and Vietnam War hero Richard Blumenthal pressured Twitter to suppress that, to suppress the hashtags. And they insisted that anyone who was promulgating the Devin Nunes report was a Russian bot. But the internal documents from Twitter today showed that Twitter officials knew that that wasn't true, that those talking about the Nunes report were actually organically driven. This is yet another stake in the heart of the Russian collusion hoax. If that Gateway Pundit story pans out, it really is not shocking because the entire Mueller investigation, the entire Russian collusion hoax, indeed, was based on two documents that they knew were fraudulent. The Steele dossier, which we now know is fabricated, which was supposedly evidence of misbehavior by Donald Trump when he visited Moscow, and the CrowdStrike's memo, which we were told at the time, proved that the Russian intelligence had conducted an online hack of the Democratic National Committee and had lagged that purloined data over to WikiLeaks. Completely and totally false. At my trial, we sought to get a copy of the CrowdStrike's report. It was denied to us by the judge at trial. Now we know why. When the head of CrowdStrike, whose name was Sean Henry, just happened to be a former deputy of Robert Mueller's at the FBI, how convenient, testified for the House Intelligence Committee, he admitted that the CrowdStrike's report contained no proof that there was an online Russian hack. At my trial, Brandon, we wanted to introduce expert testimony and forensic evidence to prove there had never been any online hack. In fact, the download times of the data would indicate that it was downloaded to some kind of portable drive and taken out the back door. Most likely, the implication here is by Seth Rich.
Wow. Let me ask you about two things where we run out of time. I want to backtrack to the CIA and Watergate. Do you believe that the CIA infiltrated the whole Watergate thing to bring down Nixon because he was trying to hold leverage over them with exposing their murder of John F. Kennedy?
Well, I think that they were trying to bring him down for multiple reasons. But first of all, they disagreed with the Soviet arms limitation agreement. They did not want to end the war in Vietnam in the timetable that Nixon wanted to end it. He ended it much faster than they did. They were opposed to his overtures to China. For those in the audience who believe, and some do, that our current problems with China start with Richard Nixon, I would point out to you that China was a poor, backwards, agrarian society with more oxen than cars when Nixon decided to restore diplomatic relations with them. There was no way for Nixon to see that the Clintons, 30 years later, would sell them military secrets, which they did, or that the Bushes would give China most favored nation trading status. Those two things are what made them a superpower. They were not a superpower when Nixon very skillfully played the Chinese off against the Russians. So Nixon's real sin was he was for peace. This is the same reason John F. Kennedy was killed. Kennedy resisted a war. The Bay of Pigs invasion, as you know, which actually started under Dwight Eisenhower. Vice President Richard Nixon headed the working group, and this was handed off to John Kennedy. Kennedy approved the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba only on the condition that it made to that it be made to appear to be an indigenous Cuban uprising. He was promised that there would be 29 Panamanian flagged bombers flown by Cuban pilots out of Panama to provide air cover for the men storming the beach. And what he didn't know is that that air cover was canceled the day before the invasion. Now, we as conservatives, critics of John Kennedy, always say, well, it was his failure of nerve, his failure to use American Air Force air power to save the men on the beaches. No, that was never, ever part of the plan. He was betrayed by the CIA. And as you know, he famously said he was going to smash them into a million pieces and scatter them to the wind. So to answer your question directly, Nixon's greatest sin was that of peacemaker. They didn't want peace in Vietnam. Peace is not profitable for the defense contractors. They didn't want a better relationship with the Soviets. They didn't want a strategic arms limitation agreement. And they most certainly did not want an overture to China. So I think all those things collectively, plus Nixon's deep distrust of the agency, Nixon hated the CIA for one simple reason. In 1960, after both Nixon and John Kennedy were nominated, President Eisenhower ordered the CIA to give both of them a strategic briefing. In that briefing, John Kennedy learned about the Bay of Pigs plan that was chaired by Richard Nixon, but it was classified. In the subsequent debate, Kennedy moves to Nixon's right and hammers him for not being tough enough on Cuba, not being tough enough on Castro. Nixon knows that there's a plan afoot to remove Castro, but because he's classified, he can't say anything about it. He always believed that the CIA briefing of Kennedy gave Kennedy the upper hand in that debate. What Nixon never saw was Jack Kennedy running to his right, not to his left. Remember, he was criticizing Nixon for the administration's lack of strength on Quemoy and Matsu, two Chinese islands that were very controversial that we were fighting with the Chinese communists over, and not being aggressive enough about Cuba.
Wow, fascinating. You're a walking history book, Roger. Let me ask you in the closing moments. CNN, others, the deep state, the powers that be, the power elite, are they all turning on Biden now over these classified documents found in his garage or wherever they found them? It looks as though, I mean, CNN today was interviewing a Republican and a few others. It looks like CNN starting to lay the narrative for Biden to go.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about this. I have predicted this on your show before. I predicted it on my own show.
Yes.
I think it's very clear. This began when the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and the Associated Press finally admitted that Hunter Biden's laptop results were real. That was the beginning of the end for Joe Biden. And I think we have now reached a point in which the cumulative weight of the epic corruption by Hunter Biden, Joe Biden himself and his brother, combined with, shall we say, the president's uneven performance in public, combined with record gas prices, food shortages, record inflation, and the possibility of World War III, I think Barack Obama, who still runs the machinery of the Democratic Party, who I believe still dominates this administration, and his allies in the fake news media have made a decision that Joe Biden is expendable. I have a piece that's up at my Substack right now entitled Why Joe Biden is Toast. I think this is the end for him. There's three possibilities here. He noticed that this information has been known to the FBI prior to the Mar-a-Lago raid on Donald Trump. I can also tell you from my own sources that the woman lawyer who dimed Biden for having these documents to the DOJ formerly worked for Barack Obama. Yes, I think the Obamas have decided that Joe and the Ho gotta go.
It's here. The guys in the control room are laughing too. Here is your Substack, rogerstone.substack, why Biden is toast. And there's CNN. So tell me this. You say that Joe and the Ho, both of them have to go. Are you thinking both are going to leave?
Well, this is a very complicated question. On the one hand, were Biden to resign because of ill health, let's say, or were he to be removed under the 25th Amendment, or God forbid that he would be assassinated by them, not by us, then she would immediately become, automatically become president. She would then have the right, she, Kamala Harris, would have the right to appoint a vice president, but that vice president would have to be confirmed by both houses of Congress, not just the Senate. This is a key point. In impeachment, the trial goes only to the Senate, and it requires two-thirds of the Senate to remove a sitting president or vice president from office. But the appointment of a vice president to fill a vacancy requires the approval of both houses. So Kamala Harris becomes a problem for the Democratic Party. She's no stronger than Joe Biden in an election, but I think that they could euchre her out of this race because I still believe Michelle Obama will ultimately be their nominee.
So do you think she becomes president for a period of time,
yes,
Kamala?
Yes, I do. I think Biden will be gone before the summer.
And then who will she point as her VP?
Well, I don't think we know the answer to that, but I keep an eye on Gavin Newsom.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. But you're saying Michelle Obama is running for president 2024.
I think they will ultimately turn to her as their candidate. Absolutely.
RogerStone.substack.com, RogerStone.substack.com, as well as StoneZone.com. Right, Roger?
Absolutely. And, of course, you can see the Stone Zone every day at StoneZone.live, right here on the Frank Speech Lindell TV website. But you can get directly to it by going to StoneZone.live at 4 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Eastern. I had Alex Jones on the show yesterday. It was a great show. We had a Nixon 110th birthday show with Monica Crowley and Tyler Nixon, a longtime Nixon relative. So there's good stuff going on at the Stone Zone. Check it out.
It is. I watched it yesterday. It was excellent. Thank you as always, Roger.
God bless you.
Roger Stone checking in, folks. Hey, if you appreciate what we're doing, don't forget about my foundation, WVWFoundation.com, WVWFoundation.com. It exists to put out a lot of my programs for free. Many people put theirs behind a paywall. We put ours out for free. Many networks pick it up, and we don't charge them. And we pay the bandwidth. If you go to my website, wvwtv.com, I pay for all that bandwidth, thousands of dollars a month to give away free programming. Our foundation helps push that out there as a ministry to help people understand the times through the lens of a Christian worldview. We also have a Sunday night service we sponsor with the foundation. I've been hosting that Sunday night service every Sunday night since 2015, where we literally open up the Bible and look at the issues of the day through the lens of a biblical worldview. That's at 8 p.m. Sunday nights right here on frankspeech.com and wvwtv.com/live. If you appreciate all that we're doing, please support the foundation, wvwfoundation.com. Thanks so much for watching tonight. Great show, great guest, and we appreciate your being here for it. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care. Hello, I'm Brandon House. If you appreciate this 24-hour-a-day free broadcast platform, will you consider supporting us? One way you can support us to keep pushing out free programming to people all over the world is by joining in partnership with WVW Foundation. The WVW Foundation exists to proclaim the truth of a biblical worldview, to help people understand the times through the lens of a biblical worldview. If you appreciate that, we appreciate your partnering with WVWFoundation.com. That's WVWFoundation.com. If you prefer to support us through the mail, the mailing address is WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee, 38027. If you prefer to support us over the phone, you can make a contribution by calling 901-468-9357. That's 901-468-9357.
Your support of the WVW Foundation, as I said, allows us to push out free programming. Many people put their programming behind a paywall. If you don't catch it live, you don't get to see it. WVW Foundation is committed to working with WVW Broadcast Network to push out programming as a ministry of the foundation. The foundation also sponsors a Sunday night service that I've been hosting since 2015. If you'd like to join us for our Sunday night service, you can do so every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time at wvwtv.com/live. wvwtv.com/live. Thanks again for your support of the WVW Foundation at wvwfoundation.com.